You're listening to the Ardent Development Podcast with Ron Smith and Derek Hatchard. Whatever your role in the software development industry, join them in the search for inspiration and insights as they talk with practitioners and thought leaders from the world of tech and beyond. Visit ardentdev.com to subscribe to new episodes.
Welcome to the Ardent Development Podcast. I am Ron Smith.
And I am Derek Hatchard. Today we are speaking with Jerry O'Brien. Jerry is a senior content development manager at Microsoft Learning with a focus on software development and database platforms. He has over 18 years of industry experience in various roles, including software development, consulting, and training. He has a Bachelor of Science in Information Technology Mobile Development degree and experience programming in a long list of programming languages. And I should probably also add that Jerry and Ron and I all worked together back in the day. So there's a little bit of a reunion happening on the podcast today. So welcome, Jerry.
Hey, thanks very much, Derek and Ron. Really glad to be here.
I'm trying to remember when we first met, and this is my memory of it. I had moved from Toronto to Moncton, New Brunswick, and I was interested in the .NET developer group that you were leading at the time. And I think I cold emailed you and said, "Hi, I just moved here. Can I help?" And I think that's how we met. Does that match your memory?
Your memory is 100% correct. Yeah, I did receive this email from somebody I had no idea who it was. And at the time, the user group was actually just the VB.net users group. And you contacted me about it, said that you were moving from Toronto. You were interested in getting involved. And shortly after that, we got together and changed it to focus on .NET technologies, not just VB.NET, and that's where it went from there.
The .NET developer group became a broader developer group, which became Maritime DevCon, which was a conference that actually Ron and I started that still runs. Really, that work with the user group, it really helped with the Microsoft Regional Director Program that I was a part of. So in many ways, that one encounter became the foundation for a lot of other things for me. So I guess I should say thank you, Jerry, because if you hadn't started that, I might be in a totally different space right now. So that's awesome.
Well, it's amazing, you know, those little things like a little springboard like that, how it actually changes, you know, where you're going, because that's a part of the reason why I'm where I'm at today as well. So it's one of those, I don't want to call it freak happenings, but it's one of those little oddities that you look back on and say, you know, that was a point in time where, you know, futures change for sure for you and me by the sounds of it.
Yeah. So I'm always interested in how people arrive at their current point in their career. Can you rewind for us and tell us a little bit about your entry into the IT industry and really what you were doing in those sort of at the early part of those 18 years of industry experience?
Yeah, it was. And, you know, before I start talking, I think a little bit about the 18 years, I'll do a short divergence, just go rewind a little bit further back where, like a lot of people back in the early 80s, I started playing with the, you know, the Commodore VIC-20, Commodore 64 type computers, which really spawned my interest in programming because, you know, most people who know anything about those computers, there wasn't an operating system on them. You had to type in your own code to get the thing to do anything at all. So that really spawned my early interest in computers. And as I spent time in an HVAC career, there were many instances where we dealt with a lot of different computerized applications for the HVAC industry over the years. Commercial air conditioning started going into computerized controls. A lot of your processes that might be in food and beverage plants where there's refrigeration systems were using programmable logic controllers. So again, just a lot of computer technology that was integrated into it. And the more I get into using it, the more I truly got bitten by the bug, if you will, and really get interested in doing it. So I started spending more time learning more programming, learning different programming languages, focusing on computer hardware, started and ran a small part-time company, building and selling PCs, you know, which led to a lot of experience in operating systems, computer hardware, and server systems. But really that whole developer bug was the thing that just kept drawing me back into, you know, the creativity of programming, the problem solving and different things like that. So I started spending more time doing things like that, building small productivity applications for companies that I worked for, even though I wasn't in the IT side for those companies. And then I still don't actually recall exactly how I managed to get into the training side, but I did work at a company called ITI, Information Technology Institute, and they ran a bunch of different schools across Canada, and there was actually three of them down here in the U.S. So I taught with them for a little while before the company ended up going into receivership, went to work for a smaller private company who was doing a lot of Microsoft official curriculum training. So I earned my Microsoft certified training certification through them. And during all of that time was actually, as you alluded to earlier, where I had started that .NET developers group. And a part of that developers group was a little selfishness for me because I wanted to learn more about .NET technologies. I had started writing a book for Visual Basic .NET when it was still in beta. So before .NET 1.0 released, I was working for Rocks Press and actually went through the process of writing a book for them around .NET 1.0, specifically on VB.NET. And then that, as we talked about that being a springboard, the fact that I had run the .NET developers user group with Derek, and the fact that I had also acquired an MVP, so a Microsoft Most Valuable Professional credential as a part of that. Microsoft, through the MVP program and through the MCT program, started to recognize some of my contributions, and I started doing some technical review for their courseware. So that was kind of a quick rundown, I think, if you will, on where, while I was still living out on the East Coast in Atlantic Canada, where my sort of the IT experience and IT knowledge and my starting to shift into that full-time came from.
So for the people who aren't familiar with Microsoft Learning and Microsoft Official Curriculum, can you give us just the elevator pitch on that?
Yeah, so Microsoft Learning actually started from what used to be Microsoft University, and they created classroom-based training. And this was where organizations could send their IT staff to a learning partner, and they would sit through 3-day or 5-day training where a certified instructor would teach the content, and the students would come away with, you know, the knowledge and experience to go back into their organizations and implement the technologies. So it might be on, you know, the latest operating system, or, you know, when Active Directory was released, how do we implement that in our systems? And so it was primarily delivered at learning partners, but the content was created and managed through Microsoft Learning.
And then, so part of what you were doing is Microsoft was saying, hey, Jerry, we've got this course that we're going to send out to our trainers. Before we do that, can you take a look? Can you review this? Make sure that it makes sense. Make sure it's accurate. Those sort of things.
Yeah, absolutely. We take the content, we'd read through it, make sure there were no technical inaccuracies in it, and then we would take the hands-on labs that the students would be participating in, and we would run through those and make sure that they worked effectively and did what they were supposed to do and there were no bugs in them.
And so then how did you make the leap from contractor doing some work there to Microsoft employee living in the Seattle area?
Well, that's kind of an interesting story, and when I tell a lot of the people at Microsoft about it, they kind of shake their heads at first, because I always tell people that I initially turned Microsoft down on their job offer. So how it came about initially was, as I mentioned, I was doing the technical review. So I would work with what they referred to at the time as technologists on the Microsoft Learning team. So I would periodically be on the forums back in the days of the NNTP protocol when we were using newsgroups. And I would respond to these opportunities for technical review. And there happened to be one that came up where it was talking about, it seemed to be a little bit like a technical review, but there was something a little different about the posting. So I responded to it, and it ended up being a hiring manager for that team that was responsible for the official curriculum creation. And before, I remember having the conversation with my wife before I went down and had the phone call. And she clearly told me that if this was a full-time job in Seattle, that she was not interested in moving and that, you know, we shouldn't even be discussing it. So I went into the phone call with that in mind, and about 3/4 of the way through was when I realized that this phone call that I was on was actually a phone interview for a full-time position with Microsoft in Seattle.
Surprise.
Surprise. So we continued the conversation. You know, they had to, you know, continue asking me a few questions and different things. And at the end, when they asked if I had any questions, you know, obviously my first one was, so this is for a full-time job? And Janet said, yes, it is. And I said, does it require moving to Seattle? And she said, yes, it would. And I said, I'm really sorry to waste your time, but I don't think I can convince my wife to move. So we ended the conversation, you know, on good terms. And, you know, she let me know if anything changed to certainly give her a call in the future. And I hung up. And then when I went back upstairs and sat down next to my wife, and she looked at me and said, "So that was Microsoft?" And I said, "Yes, it was." And she said, "It was a full-time job." I said, "Yes, it was." And she said, "It was in Seattle." And I said, "Yes, it was." And she said, "So that would be like a really nice job for you." And I said, "Well, it's Microsoft. So for most people in IT, it would be a dream come true." And I said, "To top it all off, the manager at the end of the call told me that I was considered to be a really strong candidate for the position." So she sat in silence for all of about 30 seconds. And she said, "Is it too late to call her back?" And I said, "Well, why do you want me to call her back?" And she said, "I don't think you should give up the opportunity." So I went back downstairs, dialed the phone number, not realizing the way Microsoft switchboard worked. It was basically their switchboard. So I thought, how am I going to get in touch with this person again? But fortunately, I remembered her name, and I was able to just speak it into the phone, connected to me. They were all still sitting in the office discussing this. And so when I let her know that we should go through with the with the interview process, she was all excited and said that I would be contacted later. And we hung up the phone, and they went through the process of scheduling the interview. So it was a really interesting experience. Not many people, I think, turn down a company like Microsoft and get a second chance.
That's a great story.
So, Jerry, I want to ask you, when I come across people that have made that transition, you know, most of the companies around in Canada or in the Maritimes, they might have one or two buildings that they're working out of. They might fill the building, but what I've heard, the rumor has it, that it's almost like a town mentality here on campus, where there's transportation for employees, there's dry cleaning, there's things that Microsoft does to make life easier for their employees. And I wanted to ask you, I mean, is that true? How would you describe that, the area of town? Does it feel like you live in Microsoftville, or how would you describe that to me?
You know, it's interesting, Ron, that you asked that, because when I first got to the main campus and you know, as awe-inspiring as it was just to be in that specific area and taking a look at the number of buildings in the first section, that I'll call it, that I was involved in, it was hugely eye-opening, because, you know, I had never seen anything of that size for a company. And then, you know, the longer you're there, you start to realize it, just in the Puget Sound area of Seattle, somewhere in the vicinity of 60,000 employees. I can't count the buildings. I don't know how many buildings there specifically are. A few years ago, they built on what used to be sort of the West. They don't really call it the West Campus, but there was a bunch of older buildings that they had on one side of State Route 520, which was still a part of all Microsoft. They completely tore those down and rebuilt. And so now they have this area over there that is kind of like a little town. There's one major building that they call the Commons, which has a lot of different retailers in there. So we have mobile carrier retailers in there. We have a plethora of restaurants in there. There's a ski and bike shop in there. There's a shipping post office in there. So it's kind of amazing when you take a look at the amenities just in that one specific section of the campus itself. And then on what used to be referred to as the main campus, which they now call East Campus, I currently work in one of the buildings on that area. And at some point in 2018, they're going to move all of us out of those buildings, and they're going to completely level East Campus, dig a big hole in the ground, and then start with a parking garage and build up. And so they're rebuilding the entire East Campus. Again, they're going to add in more retail shops, more amenities. And with the East Campus right now, we have a bunch of, you know, smaller streets that we can drive in and around to get to the various buildings. When this campus expansion is finished, there will be one perimeter street that goes around all of this, and the rest of it will be intended for pedestrian and bicycle traffic, with pedways that cross over the main freeway to allow easier transition from the East to West campuses. So just in what's coming in the next few years, even expands on what it is that you've heard so far about the campus.
Hey, this is Ron and Derek, just taking a quick break from the interview to let you know how you can support the show. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. We've both been Audible members for a long time. Derek, do you have a book you'd like to recommend this week?
This week, I would like to recommend Quiet, The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking by Susan Cain. Our industry is full of introverts. People listening are either introverted or work with introverts. This book really helps unpack what is happening inside of their heads. A great read, highly recommend it.
You can download this week's recommendation or pick another audiobook for free and support this podcast at the same time by visiting ardentdev.com/audible. That's ardentdev.com/audible. Now back to the interview.
Jerry, when I tell people about the tech industry and about the amenities and the services and the perks that people in our industry expect, or maybe not expect, but are often granted, they can't believe it. When I talk to people who work in public education or public healthcare, they can't wrap their head around it. When you look around with what you have at your disposal, basically at work, what's the most ridiculous or outrageous thing that when you see it, you're like, I can't believe they give me that, or I can't believe they do that for us?
That's kind of an interesting question. I mean, like most organizations, we obviously, you know, have health benefits and different things like that. But we have, twice a year, we have what we refer to as a review. So we'll do a mid-year review, and then we'll have a year-end review. And during our year-end review, which is, this is the area where we talk about, you know, overall compensation, you know, whether you're getting a raise, whether you're getting a bonus, what your next base salary is going to be, and what have you. When I take a look at that aspect, the benefits that were offered, I will honestly say they're exceptional. They're really, really good. You know, coverage for medical and dental is second to none. But from my perspective, the last conversation I had with my manager when, you know, we had the year end, and I sat down and we went over compensation, and I just looked at him and shook my head and I said, I cannot believe that they pay me this much money to create training content for people, to do what I do. I cannot believe that they actually pay me this much money. So for me, that just, it's, I don't want to sound like, you know, I'm all about the compensation, but that is the biggest thing that stands out for me, is what it is that they offer their employees to say, look, you know, this is what we pay you because you're doing the job that we need you to do.
I was expecting that you were going to tell me something really fanciful, but that's very, that was very straightforward. I had a very similar experience at Salesforce. One of the best things that you can do as a manager at a place like Salesforce or Microsoft is to be able to sit down with somebody and tell them what their raise is going to be, or tell them what their bonus is going to be, and to see the calculations happening in their head and the kind of noticeable impact that can have on their lifestyle. It's actually really cool. We are very fortunate in our industry.
Yeah, I think we are. And it's, if I take a look at, you know, considering compensation from the company, it's one of those things that if you were to go back into the early days of Microsoft, there are a lot of people who have retired as millionaires, you know, before the company did the whole split and everything else. But they still continue to draw employees, you know, university recruiting, coming from other companies and other organizations. And a lot of it is based on the culture. A lot of it is based on the compensation and the benefits package. But it's one of those things where you kind of go, geez, you know, would have been nice if I had to join way back then, you know, before the company split and had all those stock options. But you know, we get the opportunity to participate in stock purchase plans and things like that. So that's a huge benefit as well for somebody who wants to do that investment. You know, not only do you have your 401k with matching and things like that, which is great for your retirement, but you're able to invest in a company that you believe in. And I think these stock purchase programs are huge and make a big difference because, you know, as Ron talked about, some of the companies, you know, back on the East Coast, they're smaller ones. There's not always options, you know, to do stock. They may not be publicly traded companies. They may be, you know, too small to actually get to that particular point in time. So that's, to me, is another factor that kind of, you know, intrigues me and draws me to the company, and I'm not used to having the ability to do stuff like that.
One of the things that always disappoints me is when I see people, and you often see it with young people, you often see it with families that are right at, they're sort of at transition points. They've gone from, you know, zero kids to a couple of kids in a few years, and they're buying diapers and car seats and, you know, new clothes every 3 months, where they feel like they're really strapped for cash, or they haven't taken the time. But one of the things that really disappoints me is when I see a person who's in a situation where they're working for a generous company, an employer like Microsoft, like Salesforce, where I worked, and they have stock option packages. They have employee stock purchase programs. They have, you know, 401k matching, or they have RSP matching in Canada. They had health and fitness reimbursement benefits, you know, all of these options, and people aren't taking advantage of them. And when you can get someone to actually stop and, you know, look at the numbers for 30 seconds, they will say things like, oh my goodness, I would be better off taking out a bank loan in order to participate in my stock purchase program than to just ignore it. And I don't know how it works at Microsoft, just based on that in my experience, but it's always such a shame when you see people who join these companies and then don't take advantage of all of the opportunities that are afforded them.
Yeah, I will agree with that.
In San Francisco, one of the thing at Salesforce in San Francisco, one of the things that I find hilarious is there is a puppy daycare in the in one of the offices, so you can bring your dog to work and stick him or her in daycare, and you can go down and see them at lunchtime, which I find hilarious.
That's awesome. I've never heard of that.
Jerry, you're a senior content development manager at Microsoft Learning. Can you expand on that a little bit for our listeners? What does that mean? What is that job? What does your day-to-day look like?
So my day-to-day really focuses on, you know, as you can expect from the title word, it talks about content development, and that is my primary role. I focus on actually authoring, or I'll work with vendors who will author the content for us. And we create it, you know, the training that we feel our customers or the public needs. And we don't just focus strictly on Microsoft technologies, which obviously is one of the, you know, big things that we do cover. We do talk about open source technologies, and we partner with other organizations. And just recently, two of the things that I've been heavily involved in have been what we refer to as our Microsoft Professional Program. And we are creating curriculum, and so it's a multiple set of courses that are designed to help people become front-end web developers, back-end web developers, and then obviously combining those two together to become a full-stack web developer. When I go to my office in the morning and take my computer out of sleep and sit down with my cup of coffee, my whole process through the day revolves around thinking about, first of all, who are my customers? Who are the people that I'm trying to reach? What is it that they need to learn? What is it that they need to know? What is it that they want to know? What technologies do they want to be educated on? And then how do I form that in an appropriate set of training courses or individual courses on that content for that target audience? And I'll cover everything from beginners all the way up to people who are trying to get into advanced topics. You know, so to give you an idea, I've created courses for introduction to programming and introduction to C#. And then I've gone all the way up to the other side of the gamut, where I've created a course which was developing intelligent applications and bots using machine learning, Cortana Analytics Services, Microsoft Azure, and the bot framework. So, you know, I cover a lot of different aspects. I'm not an expert in all of those things, but a part of my job is becoming an expert in those. So when I take a look at training content and realize that I need to create a course on a specific topic, if I'm not well-versed in it, a part of my job is to ramp up on that technology, to learn it, to get to the point where I can create training content for people to actually go ahead and use that. So I have training content. We publish a lot of ours online now. So when I alluded to initially about the official curriculum being the classroom-based training, our focus has shifted more to online. So we're publishing first to edX.org, which is a MOOC. So if you haven't visited that, it's a great platform where there's training content from tons of companies. The W3C is on there. Microsoft has courses on there. Various universities have courses on there. And you can take the training for free if you choose to audit the courses. You don't have to pay for them. So I have content and courses on there. Because Microsoft now owns LinkedIn, who also owns lynda.com, I actually have training content on there. So my biggest focus is really online training, demo-based content that just really helps people understand technology and learn to be software developers.
So if I go to edX.org, I look for Microsoft as the school/partner, and then I get a long list of courses, right?
You do, yeah. As a matter of fact, the last time we had a conversation with edX, they told us that Microsoft has the most courses on that platform from any of the other partners that are on there.
That's incredible. Something that really strikes me when you were sharing, Jerry, is how much you have landed in a spot at Microsoft that so completely plays to your strengths. I mean, for as long as I've known you, you have been fascinated by the breadth of technology, and you have known everything. when we worked together, you wrote code and managed Active Directory and Exchange and SQL Server, and you made your own patch cables. Like, you did everything. And it seems like that has, like, all these years later, that has just continued and magnified. And now you just know more about more things, which is just, it's incredible.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, for me, that's one of the things I think that really continues to excite me really about working at Microsoft, is the fact that I can satisfy that itch. I can feed that hunger, because there is just so much there that I can do. And, you know, the opportunities are endless. And it's an organization that, you know, basically says, hey, look, if you have an idea, here you go, run with it. Take it. Go do what you want to do with it. If it succeeds, fantastic. If it fails, well, okay, we'll learn from it and we'll move on. I've never worked in a company or an organization that had that kind of mentality before.
This has been fascinating, Jerry, and it's been really awesome for me to be able to catch up with you a little bit. Can you let everyone know where they can find you online?
Yeah, I have basically a Twitter account. So at Jerry OB, that's GERRYOB. And I really don't have an online presence anymore. I used to have a blog on MSDN. I have too many varied interests, so I just really don't have time to participate in writing the blog anymore. Really, you can go on to edX.org, and you can look for my courses on there to see what kind of training content I do. You can find me on lynda.com. With any luck, I'll find some time to get back to writing a blog or spending some more time doing online, some kind of posting.
Well, thank you, Jerry.
Yeah, thanks, Jerry. It's great to get caught up with you.
Yeah, it was great catching up with you guys, and thanks very much for inviting me for the podcast. This has been great.
You've been listening to the Ardent Development Podcast. Be sure to visit ardentdev.com for the show notes, including links to the resources mentioned. And don't forget to sign up for email notifications so you're the first to know about new episodes. You can also connect with us on the Ardent Development Facebook page or follow us on Twitter @ArdentDev. If you enjoyed the show, tell a friend about it. Thanks for listening.